Good Thursday morning, Chicago. Welcome to the Mully and Haas Show on Chicago Sports Radio 670 The Score. Ruthie Polinsky is in for Mully today. We are here talking about the Cubs and the Sox and the Bears, and we begin welcoming everybody aboard the Cade Horton Express. Choo-choo! What took you so long? Good morning, Ruthie.
Good morning. Give me a C. Give me an A.
Well, yeah. D and an E. Cade Horton. Cubs needed that bad. Cubs needed that very badly. And Cade Horton has emerged as a stopper because they needed the losing to stop. You feel much better about things, or I think that he prevented you from feeling any worse if you're a Cub fan. Somewhere in between. Because the Brewers keep winning. The Brewers are amazing. 70 victories now. I don't know how you can ignore that in Chicago. And I don't know that you can prevent it from happening. They're just so good. They're the first team in Major League history. There's a first every single day. Optistat says the Brewers are the first team in Major League history to go on a road trip, score 50 or more runs, never lose, and commit zero errors.
Crazy.
It's a clean team. And they're going to stay there. But nonetheless, the Cubs needed that victory on Wednesday, and it was a big one. Cade Horton, 5 2/3 innings, scoreless, extends his scoreless streak to 23 1/3, and he is the guy they need him to be. They beat the Reds 6-1, and he has been now as good as any starter in the rotation. Is that overstating it? I want to be careful here. I get accused of being a little bit carried away about Cade Horton, but realistically, objectively, he has been their most consistent starter since the All-Star break. That's a month.
That's a fact. There's no over-exaggeration there. You look at the numbers, you see the scoreless innings. That's who he is. It's what he's become. And it's hard. If we're going to be a prisoner of the moment one day, you can be the prisoner of the moment the next day. And I think that's a fair analysis. Fair.
Yeah. Well, welcome to the club, David.
To which club?
Prisoner of the moment. You like to give me a hard time about being a prisoner of the moment.
I admit to sometimes.
And that was a prisoner of the moment.
Yes.
And you're 100% right to be a prisoner of that moment.
Can I just say that yesterday when I saw you at work, I was so happy after a Cubs win because I knew that Dustin wouldn't be having a meltdown today, this morning, knowing that I was coming in. And you guys had the Cubby collapse sort of meltdown yesterday.
Yesterday was very cathartic.
I was so happy to not be a part of that today. I just need to tell you all, it's like...
Was it a long show for you to listen to yesterday?
My personality is not... I'm a glass half full
person.
You're
not a Debbie Downer.
I'm not a Debbie Downer.
You're not. And you don't like to spend too much time looking at things in that way.
No. So, I like happy, positive.
That's good, though.
Good story.
That's a good way to look at things. And I think we could have used you yesterday.
Well, I will say this. I think for the panic meter of Cubs fans, it was like quickly going like off the rails. I think not that it's necessarily gone down, Dustin. You can correct me if I'm wrong, since I know you speak for all Cub fans. Not that it's necessarily gone down the panic meter, but it's sort of like paused, right? Like it's sort of like, okay, let's take a breath. Let's see.
These are tenuous circumstances. These are tense times.
Tense.
Because it is a pennant race. And the thing that makes it worse or exacerbates everything is the fact that the Brewers are as good as they are.
And it's out of your control.
And you didn't expect it. You didn't really expect the Brewers to be the best team in the majors or the National League. You thought maybe the Dodgers. You could accept the Phillies, even the Mets. But not the Brew Crew.
No.
Come on. Right, Dustin? That's part of it. It's a big part of it.
That's a big part of it. Much like the Cubs have been getting a day off, players have been getting a day off.
Mm-hmm.
Yesterday evening, it felt like a day off for a Cub fan. And today, I'll podcast the Fly the W, and it'll be like a day off leading into the Cardinals series.
Yeah, the dreaded Cardinals.
Even though
I did
try to tune into Braves Brewers last night for some reason, I noticed that the Brewers were leading, so I went to my clicker, and when I got to the game for about 10 seconds, and then it blacked it out and said, you don't have a subscription to this. Thanks for trying.
I mean, if you're like Boog Shamba, you can watch two games at once. So, but back to the Cubs. They get the day off today. We're going to talk to Bruce Levine at 7:25 about he was there. I love the question he asked post-game of Justin Turner about watching the Brewers. We'll get to that. David Braun, Northwestern's football coach, joins us at 8:45. Chris Chelios will join us today and talk about maybe he'll have thoughts on the Cubs. And then at 9 o'clock, Ozzie Guillen moved his day to Thursday. He's had a busy week because he had to stay up late. The Sox losers last night, 8-6. They came back. They did what they could. They're pesky, but the Mariners, their playoff team, and the Sox have lost the first two out in Seattle. But yeah, we're definitely going to start with the Cubs because that was the focus, and Cade Horton did his job. And Craig Counsell was very, I think, relieved. He sounded relieved postgame talking about his rookie pitcher.
That's a credit to him of just like getting us, you know, 17 outs and under 70 pitches, or however many he threw. That is a credit to the strike throwing. So, you know, he said he set the bullpen up. Not only did he pitch great, but I thought he set the bullpen up to have a lot of success.
You're obviously keeping the big picture in mind with him, but when you see him throwing like he was today, is there temptation to let him keep going?
I think, again, you know, we want a healthy Cade Horton. We want a strong Cade Horton for the rest of the season. And, you know, so we're going to have to make some tough decisions, and that's just part of it. And it's the right thing to do for the team and for Cade.
108 and a third innings, career high. So when he says we're going to make tough decisions, what do you think that means?
I think it means they're going to hold him back.
Does that mean skipping starts? I don't think they can afford to skip a start.
No, I think it means taking him out of a game when
they don't want
to keep him in the game.
I'm okay with that.
I am too. I'm hoping that's what it means.
Yesterday
I'm
it
hoping
was
that's what that means.
67 pitches yesterday, right?
And
yes.
Like 54 for strikes. Crazy, crazy mix.
83.6%
right?
strikes. That is the best among starters this year. 83% strike rate.
56 strikes.
Paul Skeens.
Yeah. Zero walks.
Take that, Paul Skeens.
Zero walks.
Take that, Miz. Who needs the Miz? You can't stop the Miz? Who needs the Miz? You got Cade Horton. Who's going to be the rookie of the year? Right now.
You get a vote for that?
No, I don't. Oh. I don't vote for every award.
You get to vote for the Hall of Fame, but you don't get to vote for that, huh?
Even if it's on every committee, votes for everything in every sport.
I want to know who's right now got a better chance of winning the Rookie of the Year. The Miz is an all-star because everyone else turned everything down. I don't hold it against the kid. He's great for baseball. I hope his shin heals and whatever he got, whatever he's on the injured list for.
I hope it heals by the 23rd of August.
Yeah, exactly. But you can't objectively ignore what Cade Horton has done for this team and the numbers he's starting to put up. I don't know that you can say that Jacob Mizrowski, 4-1 with all of his gaudy statistics, the body of work is better than Cade Horton's right now. How many starts? The Miz has had, you know, not as many starts. Cade Horton's done it over the period of time. Since June 1st, in baseball, Cade Horton has 6 starts of 5 or more innings that have been scoreless. Best in baseball. Better than Paul Skeens at 5. Better than Matthew Boyd at 5. Just saying. Is that over my skis?
No. The numbers speak for themselves. Coming in hard with the facts, David. That's what
I just
do.
Wonder. I just wonder if the playoffs started tomorrow. I love that debate. If the playoffs started tomorrow, who's starting game 1? Who's starting game 2? Who's starting game 3?
Don't give away pick 6. Right?
Is that part of the pick 6? Have to check
where is
out.
He in your
got a lot of questions. Okay, there we go. Yeah, that
don't
is a
give away the
that's a tease, listeners. That's a tease.
What would you do without me?
I just think I know. Thank you for keeping
too many solo
here.
Shows.
That's all right. Yeah, right. It was just really a well-timed big start from a guy that you're starting to really respect. And I know that it's fun to get behind prospects before they arrive, and I have a history of doing that. But Cade Horton really has ascended quickly to the point where you trust him as much as anybody. And yesterday was just the latest example. And the Cubs had a lot of other good things that happened yesterday.
Yes.
Seiya Suzuki was, that was overdue.
But Cade Horton left the game when it was 1-0, right?
Yes.
He left the game when it was 1-0.
Yeah.
Yeah. But, you know, they did enough at the end to...
Andrew Kittredge.
The bats woke up. Andrew Kittredge.
Do you love the term, the immaculate inning?
It's so dramatic.
It really is. It really is.
Like, it's so over the top, like, baseball, just sort of, like, arrogance, you know? Like, sometimes baseball has terms that... What's quality start? It kind of reminds me of quality start. I know Dustin's shaking his head over
quality
there.
Start, though, is a new thing because it reflects the changes in expectations for starting pitchers.
Yeah.
So what is a quality start? Six innings of three or fewer runs? And that, I think, you look at, that's the Jameson Tyone special. The immaculate inning, nine pitches, all strikes, and...
There's no other way to, what else would you call it?
Well, I mean, immaculate's very elaborate.
It's very, yeah. It's a good word, though.
You can call it a lot of different things.
Immaculate.
It's a perfect inning. You strike
but
out
you don't,
the side.
Perfect is taken because you got a perfect game.
I kind of like it.
Immaculate I kind of like inning. It. Yeah. Now that we've spoken, now that we've talked it out.
I love the headline in the Sun-Times, Immaculate Redemption, because it was a very redeeming outing for Andrew Kittredge, who I think... I thought of when he came into the game more than anything was Dustin, like, do they have to use all the new guys?
Well, again, right. It's like you had to bring him back out. But sometimes they'll sell you that that's the best way to get over a bad outing is give the guy the ball or let the guy bat again right away.
Yeah.
And it worked. You pushed the right buttons. But just imagine had it not worked. You take Cade Horton out when people think you should leave him in. You give the ball to that guy. That guy blows the lead. Boy, the tone of the game is very different this
You
got
to trust your bullpen. If you're going to neglect your starting rotation at the deadline, you've got to trust your bullpen. And I understand that. They used four relievers yesterday. When Cade Horton pitches, he may give you just five. He may give you 70 pitches. I'm okay with that until late September and October. Where I'll have a problem with it is if you're last week of the season and he's on the mound and he's got six scoreless innings, you're winning 2-0. Against the Mets. Don't they play them in the final week? Let him go. Let Cade cook.
I was surprised post-game, though, that he talked about that he's pitched the most innings he's ever pitched in his life. He's like at 105 now. So that's there. Like, that's in between the ears. That's a little potentially concerning.
Cade Horton?
Yeah.
I'm not worried about what's between his ears. Guy's a competitor. I mean, he comes after hitters.
Oh, absolutely.
He attacks.
Don't disagree.
That dude...
Yeah, he's a killer.
He's not messing around.
Yeah. I understand the hype train that you're on.
Pride of Oklahoma.
What was that train noise again? You said tell everybody to hop aboard.
Cade Horton Express, choo-choo! All aboard. I mean, really.
Brandon, did your son watch that show on Disney back in the day?
Which show?
All aboard the choo-choo train.
My son was watching SpongeBob SquarePants.
I regret
it now. He's a very sharp-witted, smart aleck. Great kid. Yeah,
we love him.
SpongeBob. That was a SpongeBob guy. So yeah, the Cubs had a day in a game that they are proud of, that they needed, and I think that as much as anything. Dansby Swanson and Ian Happ homering, we should probably not ignore that in the whole Cade Horton praise because they needed those hits and they need those guys. And that's
how about Seiya Suzuki?
Seiya, he benefited from a day off.
Yes.
And let's hope that that is contagious.
Yeah.
Because everybody needs a day off. Everyone gets one today. Kyle Tucker.
Let's hope Tucker was like, not you know, getting right next to him.
Yes,
like, you know, sitting next to Seiya Suzuki on the bench.
Right,
because his performances lately, he looks like he could use use a break.
Well, it's nice that he has today too, right?
I think that was the idea, right?
Yeah, give him two.
That is definitely the idea of Kyle Tucker not playing it. But I looked at that lineup and I saw Justin Turner batting second.
We joked about that yesterday. Yeah. Would Justin Turner bat that high? And yes, he did. And guess what? It worked.
Mr. Clutch.
It worked.
773. Ruthie and Dustin, please stop David from drooling over the Cubs.
It's not, he doesn't drool over the Cubs. He drools over Cade. Like, I love that the Cubby collapse, is that what you were calling it yesterday?
It was
the Cubby collapse crisis. Is on pause because of Cade Horton. Well,
He stopped it.
Okay.
Until further notice, it stopped. Pause is, okay, you're mispositive. Why would you say pause?
You're right.
If pause implies it's coming back. They're going to St. Louis. They can't lose to the Cardinals.
Isn't Ruthie Popo from St. Louis?
Ooh, we had to bring it up, Dustin.
Supposed to mention that.
I was trying to avoid it on this show today.
Nobody's supposed to know that she used to cheer for the Cardinals on the dugout. On top of the dugout, leading cheers.
I was nobody's shooting t-shirts into the upper deck, dancing around on the dugout.
Don't tell anybody she used to
on
be,
the Jumbotron.
Well, how many times have you been in that one attraction in St. Louis?
The Arch?
Yeah.
I've gone up into the Arch one time in my life third grade field trip.
That's it.
Yeah, you don't need to do it.
I want you to do it once.
It's actually beautiful to go see it in person, but like you don't need to go up.
It's kind of an amazing thing, and they've got that museum.
Such a random landmark, like
museum underneath it.
Yeah,
yeah.
It's a very historical landmark.
I like Busch Stadium.
Oh, are you kidding me?
I do.
Busch Stadium is the. I mean, I can't say
Don't
it
say
on
it.
These airwaves, but...
It's not better than Wrigley.
It's not better than Wrigley. But Wrigley has so much history.
Yeah.
There's something very special about Wrigley and Fenway. Like, those two, I just are in a league of their own.
It's a good call.
I
respect that ballpark, though.
I love
I like
that
being
ballpark.
There. I like the atmosphere around it before a game, too. Big game.
Yeah.
I still remember the playoffs down there. That's a
and
really
I'll,
fun
listen,
atmosphere.
Listen, I'm not afraid to say this as a St. Louis native and, you know... St. Louis Cardinals employee. I think that the ballpark village situation around mm-hmm. Busch that is now flourished was copying Wrigleyville. Like that was the idea.
You're exactly right.
Which is
and
which
they
is
have talked
great,
about that
100%.
But so was Fenway.
Right.
Fenway around that ballpark is very festive atmosphere.
See, the difference there is though it's been a while, but they actually closed the streets.
Yes.
So
thank you, Crane Kenny.
There's like carts, there's food carts and beer vendors and drink vendors on the streets.
Yeah.
Because there's really only one bar that I remember near Fenway, and that's that Cask and Flagon.
Hmm.
But yeah, I mean, St. Louis, I mean, like, it's like a food court, beer hall kind of situation.
It's a little nicer than that, if you're honest.
But, I mean, it's not separate. There's separate areas, but they're not separate entities.
Well, I think you walk in and you have multiple.
It's sort of like a mall,
right?
Like
right.
Of restaurants and bars,
a food court.
Yeah,
it's a baseball food court on steroids.
The one thing that Wrigley Field will always have over places like that, because now it's becoming very popular to do that, and I think it's a draw, it's an attraction. But Wrigley Field, it was organic. It was definitely a product of being a neighborhood type atmosphere.
So cool.
Neighborhood bars that grew into Wrigleyville and then Ricketsville and all the things that it is now. But yeah, this weekend will be fun. The Cubs are off today and they can rest up and go sweep the Cardinals.
Who just took 2 out of 3 from the Dodgers.
That's surprising.
Crazy.
Dodgers are not the Dodgers. The National League, really, you got to feel, that's why the Brewers playing as well as they are is a huge surprise in the story of the summer in the National League. But it feels like the National League could be up for grabs by the time October rolls around. Is that wishful thinking? I'm sure the Texans will weigh in. Is that wishful thinking? Don't you believe that this year has the makings of a wide open National League playoff?
Right now, absolutely.
Yeah.
I still worry about the Phillies, personally.
Yeah. Yeah, of course. They're the one of those teams you feel like you could name now with the Padres. The Padres, the way they address their bullpen needs, then they have to be considered legitimate contenders. One of the biggest statistics I've heard in the past week, it was on Hit and Run with Matt Spiegel Sunday morning, and he referenced that last year, I think 52% of the innings during the postseason were from bullpen arms, your relief pitchers. And when the Padres go out and they do what they did to their bullpen, they could conceivably enter the playoffs with the best bullpen in the National League. I wouldn't want to play them. Cubs Padres in October, that would just bring back bad memories of 1984. I know you weren't born yet, okay?
I wasn't going to bring it up.
Yeah, you were.
No, I wasn't. It predates me.
That was a bad experience. It was a really bad experience, but nonetheless.
The Cardinals are 5.5 games out of a wild card spot. They're not, like, they're still, it feels like they're still playing for something.
They are.
Yeah.
I think if you're 5.5 out in early August, you're flirting with the idea of making a run. A year ago this time, I cautioned anybody who's rolling their eyes like Dustin just did. Dustin just rolled his eyes at the Cardinals.
Yeah, that wasn't like a detention-worthy rolling.
Okay, no, it wasn't. That, but like, remember, a year ago, I need to do the math. I'll go look at it during the break. The Tigers were left for dead a year ago at this time.
Great analogy.
The Tigers were like in Detroit. Well, what are we going to do in the offseason? Oh, is it Lions started yet? Dan Campbell? Okay. Well, we love Ben Johnson. The Tigers stink. The Tigers don't stink. They went on a run, and they're still going. They're going back to the playoffs. And that is the example other teams like the Cardinals will look at and say, all right, let's regroup. Let's make a run. And you know what? The Cubs are one of those teams. I know they were just 24 hours removed from Cubby crisis mode. But they are good enough to shake this off. And I will maintain that. They are good enough to go into the playoffs and make some noise. So yesterday was a good reminder. And we'll continue to talk about what it reminded you of and just how good Cade Horton was and why he's the best right-hander in town who ever spent a moment on the Oklahoma campus. Just saying.
We all know what you're trying to say there. Well, he's the most proven.
Interesting.
So far in this town.
You think Cade Horton's more proven than Caleb Williams? I don't know.
Cade Horton is pitching at an elite level.
Okay.
In a postseason push.
Dust is nodding yes.
Or of a winner.
That's true.
I can't wait to talk Bears because Ruthie Polinsky's here. I think we're looking forward to those conversations.
Glass
also,
half full.
I'm looking forward to the segment if Ben Johnson is the most interesting man in the NFL, like Peter Schrager dubbed him.
I love this conversation.
And that will be fun. Probably in the 8 o'clock hour, maybe before that. We'll wait and see how things go. But when we come back, it's the Pick 6 next on Mullinghaw, Chicago Sports Radio, 670 The Score.
Choo-choo!
Chad, I just want to be clear. The next couple weeks, are you discussing third base a lot internally?
So well done. Matt Shaw and Matt Spiegel got together last night at Wildfire for the Cubs on Deck series. How'd that go?
So well. I love that series. Appreciate Wildfire and Huntington Bank for putting it together. And, you know, it's 60 minutes with a Cub in a room with like 70 people, 75 people. And you're not broadcast, and so it can get comfortable, it can get funny. That dude was really good. I did not expect him to be a great talker in that setting. I have not really talked to him much in the clubhouse. I don't know if you have, or if any of our guys have, but he was funny, he was smooth, he was self-aware, he was comfortable, he was easy to like and easy to believe in. You know what I mean? You could see it from the scouting perspective. It's like, oh, I get why everybody has always liked you. I get that. That's just coming off him. He brought up the dropped pop-up on his own from yesterday.
What did he say about it?
After, because I was praising a question about praising his defense. He's like, oh, you didn't. Must not have seen the game today then.
Where are your flip downs at, son?
He said he didn't lose it in the sun.
Liar.
He said, I just missed it. Didn't lose it. Lawrence Holmes said he didn't lose in the sun. He just missed it. And in the Q&A later, you'd like this, that a dude asked him about Dansby calling him off of a pop-up the night before. And because it clearly looked like Shaw was a little miffed at that. And he was talking about it. And he said, no, Dansby's got a right for all those balls, especially because he knows how it plays there. And he said, you got to understand, at dusk at Wrigley, you can lose the ball like that. Like if you look down, when you look back up, no baseball. It's gone at dusk at Wrigley. So Dansby didn't look down, just took it and got out of and Shaw got out of his way. Massachusetts kid, loved Pedroia growing up. That was his guy, was Dustin Pedroia.
Petey.
And then when he got to high school, it was Mookie. It was all about Mookie. And so those are two pretty good models.
If you're gonna start thinking about baseball players to model yourself after, and you're that size, mm-hmm. those are two really good guys to do that.
Yeah, I think so. The laser show of Pedroia's BP, and then Mookie's just is everything.
Mookie is an all-around player.
Yes.
One of the best of this generation.
We talked lots of mechanics and his need to make so many changes in a short time in his life. You know, he had to make the changes at the beginning of the year when they sent him back down to Iowa. And so I ran down them just to be sure. I'm like, all right, Matt, let's talk about this, because he brought him up. I'm like, when you went down to the minors, you stood more upright. He's like, yeah. I'm like, did you get a little closer to the plate? He's like, yeah, a little. And you lessened the leg kick, right? He said, yeah. I said, anything else? No. And I said, well, what'd you learn? He said, I didn't realize that the leg kick was affecting so many other parts of my swing. So Mr. Validation, Lawrence Holmes, I set that. Mm-hmm. Yes, and Ron Coomer as well.
Well,
yeah. He hadn't realized that the leg kick was affecting the head and other parts of his swing.
Yeah, it's pretty dramatic, that leg kick of his.
Yeah, not anymore. Not anymore.
And not anymore, but when he was coming up, like, it's like, oh wow, that can be exploited. And it was. Well, and he fixed it. And I'm glad that the Cubs sent him down there and he did the work. And that it's working out for him. And this thing that's happened, like, while a lot of the other guys in the Cubs lineup have been ice cold since the All-Star break, it hasn't been Matt Shaw.
Because there was another batch of adjustments.
Ooh.
Before the All-Star break, when they sat him down for those 3 days. And a lot of us were like, ooh, maybe they don't believe in Matt Shaw. Maybe they're going to be up there in the Suarez conversation or whatever. What was happening is that they were giving him more adjustments. And I asked him, like, did you stand more upright? And he said, yeah. I said, were your hands higher? He said, yeah. So your bat was flatter on the shoulder? He said, yeah. And I said, a little bit more of an open stance? And he said, yeah, that was the big one. So he opened his stance up, and that kind of changed his ability to turn on the inside stuff and to turn on stuff with power. And you've seen, like, the power and the slug has exploded for Matt Shaw since the break, and that stuff is why.
I'm happy that it's worked out for him, and his defense, I mean, dropping the pop-up is whatever. His defense has been pretty terrific at third base. From an eye test, I haven't looked at any of the fielding stats on this, but just from an eye test, he's looked pretty comfortable. He's made good throws. He's made some plays that I wasn't quite sure he was capable of.
Me too. Me too. And then we just talked a bunch of, you know, lighter stuff, which was fun. He said the funniest teammate is Seiya Suzuki in a nonverbal way.
I'm not surprised by that at all.
Like he said, just like constantly, Seiya will walk by you and do something, and it just breaks you up, like time after time after time. He's got a young wife. They're very young. Both of them, obviously. She was there. They're adorable. Christine met the wife beforehand, and you know, Christine's a good OG wife to talk to them about marriage, and some of that was going on. Shaw said his wife likes to come on road trips, likes to travel on some, but not on the bad road trips, like
Milwaukee,
Tampa, St. Louis.
St. Louis, Alex Kuhn, you are a winner.
It's hot
and
muggy.
And
there's nowhere to eat.
There's nothing to do. There's probably some stuff to do, but
Farrow's Donuts, downtown St. Louis. If you're going to go see Cubs and Cardinals this weekend, Farrow's Donuts.
And don't forget, Pappy's Smokehouse.
That's exactly right.
But Matt Shaw burying St. Louis last night.
St. Louis. Yeah. Boring.
There it is. He also said that somebody asked a question at the end about the social interactions at first base, right? And he had a couple stories which killed me about the social interactions. One, he said, Carlos Santana, the 16-year veteran for Cleveland. So Carlos Santana was just looking at him like, how long you been in the big leagues? And he's like, I'm a rookie. It's my first time. Santana just nodded, you know, and Shaw takes off on a lead, comes back. Santana's not saying anything, takes off on a lead. Another batter comes. Shaw takes off on a lead, comes back. And then there's three outs. And as Santana's running off, he looks at Matt Shaw and he says, I've been in the league for 16 years.
I love that as a question from the person at Wildfire. Like, we should be setting Nico up with that. We should, you know, game plan and scout the opponent. Like, hey, what do we want to know at first base this week? And, like, that's really good.
All right, do we think that means that Carlos Santana was expecting Matt to be like,
that's what I
how
thought.
About you? How long you been in the bigs?
Yeah, like, this is what we do here. I talk to you about how long you've been in the bigs, and then you ask me. And Carlos Santana's waiting on the question. It doesn't come. And then kind of passive-aggressively, he's like, I've been in the league 16 years. So, just say anything else, just runs off
the
field.
So now we know why Carlos Santana, other than the paycheck, is hanging around, still raking and getting on base. He just likes being a big leaguer.
He likes being asked
about it.
Well, speaking of that, the other social interaction that Shaw brought up. Is that great? He brought up, he said, catchers. Some catchers will be like, hey, man, how you doing? Like, welcome in, right? Like, Lawrence, you were a catcher.
I didn't do any of that.
But it's, I'm not really surprised. But it depends.
But usually I will say, as a batter, I did. Okay. As a batter, my first at-bat catch. What's up? How you doing?
Right.
Everything all right?
Well, Matt says there's some catchers around the league that are like, hey, how you doing? What's going on? They say hello. So Adley Rutschman of the Orioles, they had the first moment like, hey, how are you? Oh, I'm good. Thank you. And then, Matt did his thing, and then he comes up again, and he comes up again the third time, and Adley Rutschman's looking at him again with this big smile on his face like... And Matt's thinking, like, we already said hello. We already did this. Like, what are we?
Oh, I love that. You know I'm not a fan of the repeat hellos throughout the course of a day.
Third at bat in, like, the fifth or sixth inning, and Rutschman's looking at him like, hey, we're having a moment.
What's up, buddy?
And Matt's like, no, I'm just playing the game now. I'm kind of done with all that. But he said he's since found out that Adley Rutschman must be just a very nice man. A very kind, nice man.
I know there are some batters, if they know the catcher well, they'll tap their shin guards in their first at bat just to say what's up to them, like that sort of thing. Like, there's a lot, but yeah, maybe Adley's like looking for a friend. I don't know.
That's the thing. It just revealed so much about both those stories. Revealed so much about them as people, didn't it? Adley's just like, hey, how are you?
But the other thing is like, if you're Matt Shaw, like, you're trying to like navigate this entire ecosystem.
Yes.
So you're like, yes. I'm also trying to play baseball.
Right. I'm trying to focus on that.
Yeah. So I don't know what some of the social cues are.
Totally.
And I want to make sure I get them right. But I'm also trying to not get picked off of first base.
Yes. I'm trying not to get, you know, blown away by a fastball at 98 over my eyes.
Correct. So yeah. I can see like multiple sides of this. Of like Adley Rush would be like, hey, what's up, man? Yeah. Hey, I remember you from a couple of weeks ago. What's up, man? How you been?
You still doing good? You were doing good a couple innings ago.
How's this going for you?
Everything's still all right for you? Yeah. It's just, man. Like,
and then Matt Shaw, like in his mind, be like, why are you looking at me? This is, like, weirdo?
These socially awkward moments in the middle of a baseball game just made me giggle. So, yeah, enjoyed him very much and his willingness to share some of that stuff. Because he's a kid out there trying to figure it all out, man.
So what you're saying is that the Cubs on Deck series is pretty good.
Yeah, I mean, I love when we do those kind of things.
So what you're saying
Baseball After Dark.
So if we were, let's say, at the Budweiser Brick House in Wrigleyville.
Oh, yeah.
And someone wanted to come and see us interact themselves with Nico Horner.
I would strongly recommend it.
On August 9th. Yes. And realize
19th even.
19th, sorry. August 19th. And realize that we are going to be on from 10 until 2.
Whoa, show swap.
Yeah, we're doing a show swap so that we can be there where Nico is going to be with us on August 19th at noon. That someone who will want to come to that On Deck series powered by Verizon, the most reliable 5G in Chicago, visit your local Verizon store today. They should call right now to 312-540-0670. Is that what you're saying?
Yes.
If you're caller number 6, you're going to come and hang out with us and Nico.
Yeah, let me tell you, and that one will be broadcast. And that's, I mean, but you'll get to meet Nico and hang out, and he's like, he'll be totally cool during the breaks and stuff, because that's just like who he is. And this thing last night, there were some contest winners sitting right there at the table with Christine. It was like, and they were talking about stuff. It's like, that's... So if you're listening and you're like, oh, man, sometimes they have contests, sometimes they end up being really cool events, and then we get to meet you and get to hang out. So
August 19th, Brick House Tavern.
Yep.
Noon for Nico. Us 10 to 2 that day, switching out with middays for just that day.
Mm-hmm.
We're going to have ourselves a time, and we hope that you are the person that won.
And so, yeah. I mean, add them to the list. There's like a pile of very congenial and likable dudes on that particular team.
Now, I agree with you. That's that clubhouse. Like, I was over there a couple of weeks ago. I was there. It's a very friendly vibe. And I'm a helicopter guy. Like, it's, I'm not there every day, but even talking to the people that are there every day, it's like, yeah, this group is a good group to be around and deal with.
Now, we'll see how many games they can win.
And we'll see if it changes. We'll see if it changes now that there's some pressure on this group.
But, you know, it's funny because, like, we were talking about that with him, and he's just a rookie, but he's like, as solid as our group is, like, everybody's just the same dude each day. Like, it's just...
That's good.
There's just no questions asked, and everybody comes in. Yeah, I mean, things can get tighter in a season. We've all seen that. Do we get any confirmation that they went out and did Craig set up the party at a karaoke bar? Like, did anything happen? Last night would have been the night to do it.
It's been a good night because it's a short trip. You can make it in 45 minutes after everything is packed up and all that stuff. Because where would you rather hang out? Would you rather hang out in Chicago or St. Louis?
I'll let my sewage be the answer to that. My sewage tells me the answer, and my sewage goes to St. Louis before I do.
They've got legitimate beef about that. That's legitimate. I don't like a lot of things about St. Louis.
Yeah, just stop there.
But they've got legitimate beef about that.
I don't know.
It's legit.
We should
apologize.
Really?
Yeah.
Just because we were better at engineering in the early 1900s? It's
kind of a sinister way to do engineering. Here, take all of our sewage, St. Louis.
Yeah, just go ahead.
Enjoy that.
You take it.
Yeah.
You have it. We don't want it.
And have it shape the history of your city. That's a legit beef that they have, and they have earned it.
I don't know, sir. I'm just going to rejoice in my Chicago summer. Thank you very much.
It's pretty nice, right?
Enjoy the crystal clear water out there. In the lake.
I was driving through the city last night down here during the fireworks. Folks, we got to stop parking on the shoulder of Lakeshore Drive. It's a little dangerous. Someone was parallel parking on the shoulder of Lakeshore Drive.
Just stop and watch the Navy Pier fireworks.
Yes. Like, sir.
Yeah, that ain't right.
That's not what you're supposed to be doing.
Hey, John boy, how's the weather?
John Morosi.
JP can provide some clarity as to what went on. JP.
Bob, I will do my best.
Columnist for MLB.com.
Morosi. Where is Jeff Passan in all of this?
Here's John Morosi.
Where is Jeff Passan?
Should we just call Jeff Passan right now?
Yes, just call him.
Fox Sports baseball contributor.
JP Morosi had it first. How you feeling, Padres fans?
MLB Network insider.
Lauren, it's amazing to see what the Brewers are doing, and you don't get to have the best record in baseball while having the ups and downs of any normal season without being able to manage crises. And not having Churio is a bit of a crisis. And yet, even for the next couple weeks, 2 to 4 weeks is probably going to be out. Look at the way they have played in his absence. The Brewers continue to keep it going. They're keeping a little bit of distance now between the Brewers and the Cubs. You're talking about right now the best team in the major leagues in the smallest market. We love when the Midwest is shining.
Yes, we do.
John Morosi.
I'm so happy. I can't lie to you. It's the best moment of my life. All the fans who are here supporting me means the world.
With Spiegel and Holmes.
Sources confirm that's fun.
On 670 The Score.
We love when we get a chance to talk baseball with John Morosi. He joins us now on the Circa Resort and Casino Hotline, CircaLasVegas.com. John, obviously, we love it when baseball's doing well in the Midwest, but
not up there.
But 90 miles north of Chicago, something special seems to be going on. I know we talked a little bit about it last week. Watching this run that the Brewers is on is amazing. What have people around the league said about it?
Well, Lawrence and Speaks, first of all, great to be with you. People around the league have had to get to know some new names. If they didn't know who Blake Perkins was already, or Isaac Collins, or or Durbin or others, and certainly some names that we've known on this team for a while, but you also then add Woodruff to this mix. It's a really, really good team. It's a good team with a blend of experience and youth. Yelich, I think, he's maybe not quite his MVP self of years ago, but he's healthy, which he was not healthy down the stretch last season. The pitching, I think, has really come up in a huge way. And they even have more depth on the pitching side than we thought. Chad Patrick, all of a sudden, was one of their more consistent starters. Then he was sent down to the minor leagues for a spell because they frankly didn't need him. They have that many quality arms. Devin Williams is a Yankee. He's struggling. And now McGill steps in. So I think it is a very athletic team. And that's how you can manage the absence of someone like Churio, and even Frelick has been out at different times of the year too. They do a great job of taking balls in play and making them outs on defense. They run the bases really well. They're getting enough power. And they also have, and I know this is hard to quantify, but we all see it, they've got that it factor of the chemistry of that group. I think partially the manager, but also partially it seems almost like a really talented college team in the way that they coexist with each other. And it's a lot of fun to watch. I know Cubs fans don't want to hear it, but it's a really nice brand of baseball.
Yeah, I mean, the entire organization seems like they've figured some stuff out. I mean, are they National League Tampa Bay? Are they now the new standard for what a small market can do in MLB?
They are, I think, to an extent. And certainly it does make you wonder, teams like the Pirates, those that have been lost for a while, you say, hey, why can't you do what Milwaukee is doing? Again, as you heard in the clip when I was talking to Lauren about it, with the exception of Sacramento, this is the smallest market in the major leagues, period. It is the smallest market. And look at what they're doing. So I do think, and there's no accident, as you know, Matt Arnold, now their president of baseball operations, is a former Rays executive. So they even have a little bit of that Rays vibe to them, and then that's by design. David Stearns, when he went there, I mean, David's a very smart executive. He hired somebody from Tampa Bay to almost bring in the Tampa school of thought, and Matt is still there. Of course, David is now running the Mets, and to great effect, I think, with the way that Matt has run things. They've drafted very well. And also this, and I know that we'll probably at some point in our conversation get into the conversation about the Cubs and what did or did not happen at the deadline. You need to be smart. And as many people, Cubs fans, were saying, listen, you should trade Owen Casey, trade Kevin Alcantara. In many cases, that's fine advice. But where would the Brewers be if they had traded Jackson Churio or Frelick or Terang? Of course, they brought in Contreras when he was moved away from Atlanta, and they capitalized on another team's mistake. They were able to bring in someone like Collins from the outside at a very, very low cost. They're a really smart team that draft well. And by the way, some of the best money that you spend is on the talent that you already have in place. We just saw this week Roman Anthony signing long-term with the Red Sox. They've signed Churio long-term. They signed him before he even got to the big leagues. And when you sign the player that you already know well, it has, I think, a higher chance of working out than when you have to go invest heavily in free agency. And how many times have we seen those mega dollar deals not always work out? And for the Brewers, rightly or wrongly, a lot of those mega dollar deals and the potential of a massive nine-figure mistake just doesn't happen. They can't offer that type of money unless it's Yelich, who they already knew, Churio, who they already knew. And so they say no to a lot of investments that end up maybe being not the wisest, and they decide to allocate their money towards the players they already know well.
Six out of the last 7 years in the playoffs and didn't sell off a lot of prospects and deadline deals in those years, to JP's point.
John, who did you think did well at the deadline?
So that night, I said that I liked what the Yankees had done.
I'm not so sure I like what they've done now that I've had a chance to see how it all looks. And by the way, that's why it's a hard job to be a GM. I got to own that statement. I said that night, okay, Bednar and Doval, and they added some bats previously. I said, okay, the Yankees, it's a little bit more of a quantity over quality approach, but at least they've done the work and brought in the players. And it hasn't exactly gone perfectly for the Yankees since. And I do tend to think that number 99 not being able to be in right field every day has had a lot to do with that too, in my defense. But I like what the Mariners did, like what the Padres did. The Mariners, look at the way they're playing right now, one of the best teams, and certainly they're playing the White Sox, and Chicago has seen up close why the Mariners have been so effective here this season, especially since they added Naylor and Suarez. They added some bullpen help as well. The Padres, and this is one of my favorite topics right now. I saw the Padres in person on Monday in Phoenix, and I talked to A.J. Preller at length, and he said some really interesting things. He talked about the reliance they have on scouting, how they still believe heavily in boots in the ballpark, as opposed to now you see a lot of teams scouting on video. AJ is big on in-person looks, okay? And he's gotten a lot of them. It's why he's confident in making moves for people like Mason Miller, and then the adjustments they made to their lineup with Laureano and O'Hearn and Felix Fermin. He loves what his scouts have to tell him. That's number one. And number two, he is thorough and will actually make trades. And we've heard this before, the new inefficiency, if you will, the new ability to sort of capitalize on the market is being willing to part with your prospects and be aggressive. And AJ said to me that the more deals you make, the easier it becomes to make deals, both because psychologically for yourself, you're not so resistant to that threshold of going over the line and making the deal. That's number one. But also importantly, teams know that you are not wasting their time. So many times in this industry, anecdotally, there's a lot of talk and a lot. I've got like a three-team trade happening and we're working on this, working on that. And then you get to deadline day. Do you want to do the deal? No, I can't do it. Ownership said no, or I can't give up this prospect, whatever it is. And again, I'm not speaking about one particular organization here. This is a broad statement I hear from a lot of different people. But with guys that are comfortable doing deals, and AJ is, Preller is one of them with the Padres, if you actually want to make a deal, you call the guy because you know that he'll make a trade. Whereas a lot of times it's, I can't quite do it. Worried about the fan reaction here. Can't give up this prospect there. And then it's a waste of time. And in those last days and hours before 6 p.m. Eastern on July 31, the thing you cannot do is waste time. And A.J. Preller is someone who is known for not wasting anybody's time. He will do a deal. And so when it came time, okay, we can move Fermin, we can move O'Hearn, we can move Laureano. They did it, and they've done nothing but win two series since the deadline. The Mariners have won two series since the deadline. Again, we have to look at things in the big scope of 5 years, and I just got done saying the Brewers were smart in not trading Churio when people were asking about him. So we have to understand the balance here. And by the way, the Brewers also got criticized a lot when they traded Josh Hader, and that season disintegrated soon after that. So they're not perfect either. But I do think that the teams that are willing to make a deal stand out, and the Padres are willing to make a deal.
John Morosi from the MLB Network here with us on the Spiegel and Holmes show. So AJ Preller's a madman, and that's fun, and he goes for it. Dave Dombrowski goes for it like crazy just about every year. He's always had very willing owners with deep pockets. He kind of chases them, which is very smart, around baseball, and it's fun. Jed Hoyer looked to be in a really aggressive spot and traded for Kyle Tucker, and then lots of aggressive moves in terms of the roster. Then all of a sudden, the deadline was kind of cautious. Do you think that his contract extension announced just before the deadline had any impact on the conversations that he and other teams might have had about Cubs prospects at the deadline?
That's a fair question. I believe the answer is no. And obviously, I wasn't privy to every single conversation to know exactly if the tenor changed. I tend to think that Jed was probably aware this was in the works long before the deadline itself arrived, to where there was probably an ongoing conversation, and he probably had a pretty good sense that his future on the north side was quite secure. The thing I'll say is this. He obviously was able to make some bullpen additions. And the lineup has been really solid to the point that I'm not really sure, especially with the way that Shaw was playing coming out of the break. There wasn't exactly clamoring for, we got to get Shaw out of here and we got to get in Eugenio Suarez or Ryan McMahon, who moved very quickly to the Yankees. So I want to give him a pass on the third base situation to an extent. The rotation, I'm a little surprised that they didn't wind up with like a Charlie Morton or a Merrill Kelly. And again, Soroka, it's easy to sort of poke holes in that acquisition because he pitches once and gets hurt. But the one thing I'll say, too, on his behalf about the rotation market in general, a lot of teams that needed rotation help did not get it. The Red Sox didn't really get it. They got Dustin May, but that was sort of like a tweener fit. The Dodgers didn't. The Tigers got Morton, so more of an incremental upgrade. The Yankees did not. And so there were a lot of teams that were in that market, and it seemed to me that the rotation market was a little bit overpriced. All that being said, with all the conversations back and forth and how well he knows the guys in Arizona, it does surprise me that there wasn't a way to find, okay, would there be a fit for Alcantara? Maybe not Casey, but perhaps Alcantara for someone like a Gallen or, again, a Merrill Kelly before he was traded to Texas. Now, Texas gave up, I believe it was three of their top 15 prospects. So they had to give up a fairly significant price, but that's a price that I think the Cubs probably could have met while protecting a lot of their depth and not having to give up elite talent. So it's an interesting question. We'll never know exactly what the price ticker was. I do believe that as much as we talked about the potential of a Keller with Pittsburgh, I don't believe, based on what I can piece together, I don't believe that the Cubs were offering Casey for Keller one-to-one and that type of arrangement, even though I think that honestly that probably would have been a fair ask at that point in time. And with the Nationals, again, Soroka was the choice eventually, so clearly the Cubs and Nationals were talking. I don't think, however, that Casey would have been as great of a fit with the Nationals as he might have been with a team like the Pirates, because the Nationals already had a fairly robust group of outfielders. So I do share in some of the questioning about, okay, could we have been a little more aggressive for starting pitching? I get that. But I also think that the board of the options was not as favorable as we maybe thought, because not a lot of starting pitchers moved, especially not the controllable ones, didn't really move. And the second piece was teams that would have hypothetically been good fits, specifically the Nationals, they did not want outfielders. So that was not a good spot for Casey to go. The spot that I could have seen Casey going would have been Arizona, but again, they've got Corbin Carroll already. They've got Alec Thomas. So there's, and they have Gurriel still in place. So Casey was maybe not as perfect of a chip as we thought he was at the outset.
All right, one more thing on this, because you mentioned, you know, AJ Preller's description of you gotta make sure that they call you back if they take you seriously. So could the timing of the extension have anything to do with how other counterparts and other teams were treating him, thinking he might have been a lame duck and basing returns on perceptions of his future in that way? Just find the extension a curious timing. That's why I asked.
Sure. No, you're right. I don't think, however, and this is also part of what I would say, broadly speaking, as Rick Hahn, who was on our panel at MLB Network for the trade deadline, which is great. I loved working shows with Rick. It was a lot of fun. He describes the current GM set of people in MLB as quarter zip nation, given the preferred wardrobe of choice that we see at the winter meetings. Quarter zip nation, in my experience, they know each other pretty well. And so I whatever was known publicly about Jed's extension, I would imagine as soon as he knew whenever things were moving in that direction, his colleagues in the profession probably also knew about it. So I don't think that his status had a tremendously determinative impact on the offers that he was here. I just don't think that it had a ton to do with it. It's there, it's an element, but he's also been in this industry for more than 20 years. He's a known commodity. And by the way, in terms of making deals, the Kyle Tucker deal required some guts, and that got done. and the PCA deal, it was a sell deal and not a buy deal at that point. That also took some chutzpah, and it worked out pretty well, too. So I think Jed has a fine reputation for getting a deal done. I just think that this year the market dynamics, for whatever reason, were not conducive to him getting the major fish. And certainly that there could have been a double meeting there with the Marlins where Alcantara's name was mentioned a lot. Would have been a great fit. Would have been a great fit. But the Marlins, by the way, are playing pretty good baseball right now, too. So they weren't just going to give Sandy Alcantara away, nor were they going to give away Cabrera, because they're playing good baseball and they're trying to compete and earn some more fans in their marketplace as well.
John, we appreciate the time, man. Thank you so much for joining us.
My pleasure, guys. We'll catch up more on the White Sox next time around. They're playing a little better baseball, too. Maybe not against the Mariners, but the future is bright there on the South Side, too.
Well, we'll have that conversation next week, and maybe they'll stop their losing streak by then. Appreciate you, John.
All the best, guys. Thank you.